Okay, so I'm going to go over some books again. We just sold one because we talked about one, so then we'll show them again. So we'll start off with the free ones. These are donate only. This is I just brought another one. Has anybody been able to look at that rack by the desk that's in the middle by the cafe? There's a it's against the wall of the window, so you might not have noticed it, so I want to point it out. It's called the Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archive. It's a tall stand, and all the books on it are free, but there's an envelope by donation only, but it's not to us. It's to the archive. So Lama Yeshe was one of our teachers, and he passed in the 80s. His reincarnation is already... Did you know that Lama Osel is going to be a daddy? Yeah. So his. Yeah, he's the picture on the left. So I brought one of the books from that rack, and this one is called The Joy of Compassion. I just thought I'd show you different ones. The one that's usually, because I point to it every time, is... How to Become Your Own Therapist. So we talked about that the first time. My therapist gave it to me, which is amusing, and then I could leave her. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche wrote this one, so I just wanted to show you that. We're going to read from this one tonight. If you came Sunday, Geshe-la was reading out of this. Do you remember that? Yeah, he reads out of this a lot. So this is from Shantideva, Master Shantideva. It's about in 800 it was written. And Geshe-la ordered this book from us because he wanted this translation, and he got him from Nepal. So... It's like $11, and it is just the bomb. And it's all just verse. So I remember when Khenpo Rinpoche, Geshe-la's teacher, was here one time, and he was teaching on anger, how to deal with anger. But he was talking about patience the whole entire time, and one of my friends said, when is he going to get to anger? And at the last sentence he went, and that is how to deal with anger. So I think it's number one of the chapters in here is patience, enthusiasm, meditation. We're going to read on guarded alertness. It's just you can't believe how poignant it is for today. You know, this is just a good quality book. And then the other young lady that asked about busy people and meditating, which I'm sure we all were like, yeah, that's my problem too. So I just grabbed it. I haven't read it. Buddhism for Busy People. So I thought I'd show you that. And who's heard of Thich Nhat Hanh and don't really know how to say it? And kind of go that tish. So this wonderful monk, he's in a different tradition, but in Zen tradition, and he is just, if you've ever heard his recordings, his voice will just, it's just gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's very meditative and sweet. And his teachings are so beautiful and simple. So I just thought I'd bring a couple of those. No Mud, No Lotus. Haven't read either one of these, but heard they're great. It's a great, haven't read them, probably good. So this one I need to be reading. It's on my desk to read. It's been opened. So this is the meditations on guided meditations on the stages of the path. So this is very heady, but I wanted to show you now that you're in class 3 and you're getting ready to graduate in 2 weeks. This is like just it's the whole long. This is how you get enlightened. So, you know, if you're interested. There's a CD in the back, and it has everything you need to know. So these have the meditations and literally how you do them, but it's going step by step in something that you haven't may not have ever heard of, the Lam Rim, which means the Lam Rim Chenmo, the guided stage, great path to the stages of enlightenment. Is that right?
Close enough.
And when I first heard about it, I went, oh, that sounds good.
I've got that and have gone through the meditations on the CD, and it's a really great...
So you put the CD in. Very good. I've seen it. So you've listened to it. Tupten Shodron, she's come here before, so she's a pretty famous nun. You can look her up on YouTube and listen to some of her teachings. She's amazing. She has an entire abbey in Washington State, so it's the only nunnery abbey in the States. And one of our nuns is there right now. She wants to become a less radical nun. I hope not too less radical. And then this is the book for the course, so how to meditate. And anybody, have you opened it up and actually looked at it? Who's
just bought it?
So you get off that one tonight. You don't have. Okay, so this has so many good meditations in it. So I wanted to show you that. I'm going to hand these to the lovely Linda. Thank you, doll. That was probably derogatory. Thank you, Linda. I don't want to be on Facebook. Okay. All right, so we've been talking about the 7-point seated posture. For those of you who haven't been before, you haven't heard about it. But does anybody have any questions? Have you been trying it at home a little bit? Good, some nods, good. You're trying a different location tonight. You're going to, just to confuse me, right? Oh, your spot was taken. So have you been trying to sit, and do you have any questions about posture or pain? You know, pain comes up. Yes. Do you want to hand her a mic? Okay. Chris has got you. We record these so that for the new people, not just because we can probably hear each other, but we're streaming for the other 300,000 people. We want to hear your question. 400,000. Good.
Can you give some advice on sitting on the floor? Last week I tried it, and my legs would either go to sleep, I kept changing positions, and I did try some cushions for support, but didn't quite get it right. So if you could give some advice on that.
Yeah, it's important to, if this is just going to be something passing, it's, you know, if your legs go to sleep, no big deal, right? It is kind of humorous when you try to get up to, somebody will ask me to turn the AC down, and I'm like hobbling over to them. So you do not actually want that to happen on a regular basis. You know, it's not going to do anything harmful a little bit. But I've heard from one of our teachers to say if that's happening, it means you need to adjust the way you sit. So you want to get your hips higher than your knees. But some people's backs, not very often, want to be a little bit lower, you know, than the knees. So you have to know your spine. But if the legs are going to sleep, that's an indication that it's not right. So change that. And then something that's kind of easy, but if you sit in crisscross applesauce, we called it Indian style, but that's wrong too. So if you put one leg under the other, you can cut off the circulation, which is obvious, but sometimes you just don't think about it because your body naturally sits like that. So as some of you are trying stacking the feet like this, with one on top of the other, with their ankles kind of, however that would look. And sometimes you can find that the bony bone, the round one, fits into the kind of the nestled nook of the other foot. Yeah? And they can stack. It doesn't always work for all of the anatomies, everybody's anatomy. But then we talked last week about putting something like this gentleman right here. What's your name again?
Sam.
Would you give Sam a cushion, a round one, or two square ones? Because his knee, you know, his hips are a little tight, which is fine. And if you shove that underneath your thigh, it will take away the pressure from it hanging. And then you can take a blanket at home and roll it up and put it underneath your thighs so that you don't have it just hanging. So see what that feels like.
And then the other side. Right here. Under your thigh. Yeah.
We're here to please.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a yoga teacher too. She can look at her go. Yeah. How's that feel?
Better.
Sam's comfortable. Does everybody else feel better now? Okay. See, and then it won't, then you can I call it chunking down, but then the hips can start to open naturally and then eventually we'll look like that. You know, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen tonight. It's going to take time. But don't let it go numb too often. Okay, anything else for body? Good. Everybody else has nailed it. So, and it's perfectly fine to sit in a chair. You want to try it every once in a while because sometimes even if you just sit a little bit on the floor, it's not like that's going to get you more enlightened faster. It's just people want to end up getting on the floor. If you do sit on a chair, and if you do, and I haven't said this before, or you haven't heard it before, I've said it before, when we're ready to meditate, literally, then lean forward and don't lean against the back of the chair, which is perfectly fine while we're chatting. Then we get ready to meditate. Just roll your spine up and don't lean back so that you start to use those back muscles and then the spine is straight because when we lean, we have a little bit of a curvature. So, okay, there's no possible way to get through this material just so you know this. Number three, not going to happen. So we'll just do our best. We didn't get through last week. Tonight we're going to start with 9-round breathing. So there's all these levels and ways to do it. So depending on your personality and how much information you can take in, you just do the part of it, that's how I'm going to explain it, the way that makes you comfortable. If I keep yakking and you're like, it's just the coffee hasn't kicked in yet, then just go back and do the simple method. If you're ready to take on a little more, then you can do it all. So I'm going to explain the whole thing, and then you do the parts of it that are comfortable. Now you're curious, aren't you? Okay, so it's very simple. Who's done alternate nostril breathing like in a yoga class in the 80s? Okay, so you know, like, kind of do like this. Breathing up to the third eye. Exhaling. You have to get it clear first. So you go back and forth. So that's the premise, but we're going to do it different. So Geshe-la will usually say take, and he, I think he crosses over, doesn't he? Or does the same side? Everybody does it different. Maybe same side. Does he cross over? I think so too. Okay, we'll do that tonight because you'll forget anyway. So take the ring finger of your right hand, and you, instead of just like poking it against your nose, kind of a lot of people do that, just make a nice graceful little, close your fingers around it and lightly close the left nostril and breathe in. Switch sides and breathe out. Breathe in, switch sides. Yeah, no, inhale. And exhale, inhale. These are just the mechanics. Exhale. Okay, that's three. Then we're going to switch sides and do the left hand. All this, I'm sure, means something very deep. We're just going to do it like this. Inhale left, exhale right. Inhale left. We're doing it fast. We'll do it slower when we're practicing. Back and forth three times. Then you just rest your hands in through both and out. Three times. That's basically all there is to it. Now here's the whole story. Here's the rest of the story. So all of our thoughts have energy, and we don't really mean it kind of new age kind of energy, but they just ride on energy. So every thought has some kind of like power behind it, some kind of energy. You can feel that when you have an angry thought. We always use anger in Buddhism because it's so easy to identify. But let's say a jealous thought or a happy thought. It has some kind of energy to it, right? So that energy resides somewhere within this system. And so if you think about how many meaningful thoughts you have a day, you know, yeah, he's like, yeah, not that many, right? You know, if compared to how many thoughts we're having a day, how many of them are absolutely useless? Most of them. So that energy is wasted. So if a virtuous thought has a virtuous energy and is very helpful to our minds, and a negative thought has a specific energy because it's harmful to our minds, but a majority of them are just like, just, oh God, the rambling of our minds, right? So you should roll in our eyes. So it's a lot of wasted energy. And that energy, it exists. So it's kind of hard. You can't touch it. You can't feel it. It's even hard to talk about it. But if you believe it, I almost want to say clap your hands three times. But if you believe it, then you want to do something to keep the system clean and to keep your mind clean. So this is an active meditation that kind of takes the energy out of your body. So it sounds a little hippy-dippy, but they've been doing it for thousands of years, and they're really happy. And that's why you're here. So this is a method. So the simplicity is breathing in three times and then switching sides and then both sides. Now, that's the simple way. So you can just do that. And then the other way is to imagine, since there's channels of energy, have you heard of chakras or chakras? You say potato. So the chakras are energy centers. Most of us kind of accept that now. It's not that weird to talk about it anymore. But the when you breathe in, so imagine like a candy cane, the shape of a candy cane. But picture it as a clear tube. So when you breathe in on the right side, you breathe in and then it comes down. So it's like an empty tube, comes to the base of your body, crosses over and comes back up and out that tube. Can you picture that? It's not too complicated, right? So you're breathing in. I could draw that, couldn't I? Yeah, I could draw that. Coming down. Then I'd have to do the skirt thing again. Down, crossing over, up, coming out, and then you switch sides. So if this is a tantric practice, and we're just going to say it doesn't probably mean what you might have heard. I'm not going to say anything else about it. So it's not that in this tradition. Tantric is working with energy and working with visualizations. But this practice, if you really knew how to do this, like on a deep level, this goes from like us tonight to the teachers and people who've been doing, like, really amazing people. This practice can be so much. It can be so rich and so deep, clearing those channels, because eventually they do more things with it that we don't really know much about, right? We're not going to talk about it much, but just that this is a way to start, and it doesn't, or let's put it in positive. You just want to try and place the seeds in your mind of trying something without really knowing. You don't have to always know exactly what it's going to do, right? You just trust that this is an ancient system. So you just try this and believe that it's clearing your energies out. And then when you, so that's either side. And then both, you're breathing in, you picture the tubes going like this. And here's the tricky part. It goes down and joins in the middle and comes out the central channel out the top of your head. Okay? So Geshe-la says it's like if you took the body of water like in a river, it's a or a stream, it's a singular unit or singular piece of water, a little tributary. And if you took a bunch of them and you joined it into the ocean, you've got some water happening. You've got some power. So that's like I think he's explaining, does that relate to the energy, Chris, Linda? When you're thinking of all those tributaries, he's saying you're picking up the steam like you're gathering all this energy and then you're letting it go out. Would that be a good way to, so it's instead of just thinking of a thought and having it go out, you're putting some power behind it. So, you want to try it? I can just read the whole thing to you. But with this one, I kind of like not reading this one and let you do it. What do you think? Think you got it down? Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. Thank you. Because I could just say one round and then you can do it. That's right. Because, they do have colors and things in here. Do you want to do it? Let's read it. Okay. Some people like quiet. I'll read it and then I'll just be quiet for a little bit and let you do it. So you keep doing it when I become quiet. Just keep going and going. Okay. Assume the position as we say. So they say this comes from a more esoteric collection of meditation practices contained in Tantra, clearing the energy channels. So those are called the winds. So you have that. And it's like the rider on a horse. And in this meditation, we're learning to bring balance to these winds, to bring the mind into neutral. So this is setting the groundwork for a meditation. This is what a lot of people do before they meditate. So in the beginning, just focus your attention on your breathing. So before we even start, just you can count your breaths or settle your mind in any way that works for you. Okay, let's set an altruistic motivation for this session, that we're not only meditating for our own individual benefit, but we're taking the time. We came here tonight to learn how to help others too, so we can become more wise and more kind to benefit others. So begin by visualizing the three psychic channels or tubes within your body through which the wind energy moves. The channels are round and hollow, the size of a straw, and very fine, smooth, flexible, and luminous. The central channel is blue, and it starts at a point midway between the eyebrows, curves up and back along the inside of the skull, like the handle of an umbrella, and then down along the inside of the spine to a point 4 finger widths below the navel. The right channel is red and runs from the right nostril back and then downward along the right side of the central channel, to end at the point 4 finger widths below the navel. The left channel is white and also runs from the left nostril down along the left side of the spine to end 4 finger widths below the navel. So for this meditation, imagine that the ends of the three channels join together at this point in your navel and focus for a moment on this visualization. And now holding the left nostril closed, inhale slowly and fully through the right nostril. And imagine that you're sending the breath all the way down to the end of the right channel. Imagine the breath flows from the right channel into the left as you move your finger to the other side and exhale slowly and fully. As your breath leaves the left nostril, imagine that all the impurities, such as distraction and mental dullness are expelled with the breath. And then repeat two more times. Inhaling through the right, exhaling through the left. Imagining impurities being expelled with each breath. Then when you're ready, reverse the process. Holding your right nostril closed. Breathe in deeply, sending the breath all the way down. Do that three times. Now inhale slowly and deeply through both nostrils, sending the air down through the right and left channels. And as you exhale, imagine the breath is expelled up and out through the central channel. And then as you breathe out, imagine that you're expelling all the impurities out through the point between the two brows. And then repeat two more times. And then imagine that the three channels are completely clean and luminous. And then continue in silence for a few minutes. How are your channels? Good. So who liked that? Good. Who found that to be like, what? Is it too much?
A little bit, but I liked it.
Did you go back to the simple method of just doing, not doing the channels and the hooks and umbrellas and candy canes?
Conventional breathing, yeah.
Okay, just conventional breathing, okay.
It got me like right to that point where it's like I can focus now.
Good. Yeah, and so this meditation is used by very advanced teachers before they prepare for their meditation. So it's something that can just stay with you. You can really grow with this. I always tell a little story to the people who come in as a visitor that my daughter Miranda when she was about maybe 2 years ago or a year ago. She's 17 now. And I said something about a test, and we were chatting about, were you nervous or something, and I said, well, what do you do when you're nervous? And she said, she's not very snotty at all. I don't know, you taught her, was she very snotty? Okay. She doesn't have like that attitude. And she went, 9-round breathing. I was like, I never taught her 9-round breathing. So we have the family program to thank. And that was a really beautiful moment, you know? And so I tell every visitor, because when they have questions about the family program, like, if I taught her that, you think she'd be doing that? Pfft, no way. So she just owned it. And can you imagine, she's in their test before the test? Oh, I wish I could see that. So if she can do it in school before tests, like, you know, that's something you could do at your desk and just hide behind your computer screen. People think you're just blowing your nose or picking it or something. But it's a really, really cool thing to do. So there's another level. We'll do that next week, and we'll keep you waiting for it to add to it. But I think it's something that you'll find that helps. So the reason that we do that is to learn to focus, right? That's the whole point. That's why you're here, a lot of you. So they're telling me to talk about analytical meditations, stabilizing meditations. So we've talked about it some, but we just keep reiterating the fact that the reason it's so important to concentrate is because that's how you get somewhere. So we talked about how you need to concentrate if you want to study, if you want to rob a bank, anything you want to do, you have to be able to focus and concentrate. So to be able to become enlightened, or just to be able to become happier, you have to actually be able to focus. And a lot of us say that now because it's just so much more difficult to focus with our cell phones in our hands and everything that we're doing. And so it just sounds too simple every time we say it, that we simply need to focus. But how often do you say that? Like, oh my God, I just need to focus, you know? And so if you learn to do it in meditation, you'll be able to take all that into your work life and your family and everything. It will benefit you so much. So in meditation, a lot of times Geshe will refer to like the simple breathing meditations, but that is a concentration meditation. Because that's your object. So we talk about, what is your object? So your breath is your object. And then we'll talk about other objects in just a second. And then reviewing something. So we don't tend to do that as much as Westerners, because I haven't memorized a book lately. You know, I don't know if you guys have. But the Geshe's memorize books and verse, and they just review it. So like Shantideva, they review what they remember. So it's a way to meditate. So it does help for those people who don't really like that sitting in silence, and it makes you kind of feel like you can't get control of your thoughts. You can review things. You can read something and then just, well, that's analytical, that's next. But review is going over something again. So analytical. This is so important, because you can't really get anywhere unless you deeply analyze it. And if here's a way to explain this. Like, if you were saying, what's an experiential sense versus just a thought? Do you know the difference? Does anybody want to say, like, what you would think the difference would be? Like, just a thought about something versus, I want to be a school teacher, to have an experiential experience of becoming a school teacher. What do you think the difference is? Adam, right?
Yeah, like a deja vu type of feeling?
Can you say that in the microphone?
Oh,
like a deja vu type of feeling?
Because that feels like an experience, like you're having something deeper?
I guess so.
Okay, like, that's one way. Aaron's got it in front of you.
Would a flashback of something that was like really intense, like, be there?
A flashback?
Like, for instance, like the first time you ever went skydiving?
Oh, like remembering it?
Yeah, or something like that.
That could be experiential. It's like the sense of it, you, experiential is hard to talk about because it's experiential, because it's not words. Words don't do. You know, that's an experience. So that's why it's always humorous when you try to say, what does it actually mean? So that could be counted. Let's see what we think. So if I said, I want to be a school teacher when I grow up, my daughter wants to be a school teacher. So she wants to be a school teacher, and she graduates and she's teaching. And she's like a school teacher because they told her she was one. And her certificate says she's one, and she's in she's getting paid for it. So she's probably a school teacher. But one day a student comes up and says, her name's Miss Benson, you know, Miss Benson, when you were explaining what I'm trying to think of, really cool, you know, like something that's like they get it and they go, is that what you meant? Oh, I never thought of it like that. And all of a sudden, like, she feels like a teacher. And I just got goosebumps thinking about it. Like, you feel like a teacher because what's a good way to explain that? Like a sense of it.
Accomplishment,
but there's something happening, like, on a sensory level.
Ownership. It's almost tangible.
Yeah. Like, it's just like you feel it. It isn't just something that somebody said, or it's not just like we go through life and we're always just talking about things and we can explain, like, going on vacation. But if somebody goes, you know, when I was skydiving, and they say it in a way that you like a flashback where you can almost relive it, I wonder if that would be experiential, right? That would count. So that makes sense to everybody, right? So if you are thinking about bodhicitta, which means you want to become enlightened for the wish, you have the wish to become enlightened to benefit all sentient beings. We say it all the time, so it just sounds like, yeah, that's nice. I want to have bodhicitta. But if you actually had bodhicitta, it would be such a different thing. You wouldn't have to think about it. It would spontaneously arise. And we have to think about it. I should be nice. And eventually, you are nice. So we're working on it. So you actually have to be able to concentrate to get to that point. And then, if you could, they're sitting in a meditation and you're thinking about bodhicitta. So you're thinking, you're using cognitive abilities. It's great. It's a really pleasant experience or pleasant thought. But if something happens where you think about a kindness you did for somebody in the past, or like a flashback idea, or something that you wanted to do, or some kind of sense what bodhicitta actually means, you're having a experience and a subtle realization. It may not be the full realization of bodhicitta, but you're having a moment. You're having a beautiful moment, right? And does everybody know, like, you've had these moments where you just, and they're very fleeting usually, because why are they fleeting? Why doesn't it stay? Because what don't we have? Focus. We don't have concentration yet. And without concentration, it rises and then it goes, ooh, and then you can't even grab it. It's gone. Now, the teachers explain that there's like 9 levels. We've talked a little bit about the stages of concentration, the stages. And they're tangible. They're not just like, ooh, he's really getting there. It's like this and then this and then this. So if you were literally doing it and you were on this path to become a concentrated meditator, and that's called achieving calm abiding, even if you were on stage 4 or 5, it means you could hold the object without your thoughts entering and without leaving the object, whether it's breath or a holy image, for as long, so let's say 30 minutes. Stage 4 or 5, I think, is about 30 minutes. Now, we probably have never experienced being able to focus for 30 minutes. Like, can you imagine? We can think when we're at work we're focusing, but I mean, like, without anything being able to take from the object. For Venerable Rene, they shot a bullet by his head, and he was like a little bird. He had no judgment. It had no impact on him because he was completely focused. He was completely focused. I don't know what that means. So in meditation, the reason we're trying to do it is because if you're thinking of bodhicitta and you start to have this experience that arises and your heart is moved and tears can come. I asked the teacher, is that over sentimentality or is that what you're talking about? And he was so excited. He was like, yes, that's what we're talking about. Sensation comes, you're moved, so you stay there. You stop your analysis and you stay there. But it's, for us, it's going to come and go like a wave. But if you had concentration, do you understand how beautiful that would be? That's bliss. You know, you're going to get in a subtle stage of bliss because you can hold it yourself as long as you want to hold it. So, as long as you want to hold it would be the 9th stage. You decide. Ah, sign you up for that club? Right. So it's not to be just taken lightly. Like, focus is the only way you can become enlightened. But even if that's not your ultimate goal, even to be just kinder, you have to be able to concentrate. So it comes all the way back down from the mountain to just saying, focus on your breath. And that's why. So I'm just trying to do it with emotion to give you some steam behind why you would want to keep going. And if you get filled with despair or frustrated, or you feel like you can't do it and the thoughts are just coming and going too much, that's why, because you can do it. And concentration will be the vehicle to get you there. Does that help a little bit? Does anybody want to ask a question about that part? Not like I know, just like I say.
It's just a very simple question. Mm-hmm. When you're doing this, our goal is to be able to do this on our own.
Mm-hmm.
How do you stop? Like, without a bell or a timer or... Because I feel like if
how do you stop the bliss?
Well, I mean, sometimes if I'm sitting there, I'm worried about, am I sitting in it too long? Am I not, how do you not focus on
it? When I first started, I used, and now there's apps, right? There's an app for that. I'll tell you, there's probably, how many meditation apps do you think there are? I bet everybody in the room has looked at some. So you can just set a timer, I think I just set some little timer, like a literal timer. Because it feels like you're going to get lost into it, or you're not going to make it to work or something. And then after a while, you realize you just sort of come in and go out. So I didn't even think about it, but I never used them again. Do you have that experience, you guys? Like, you just kind of come in and come out. And it's kind of a natural feeling. But I think if you're thinking, like, if we had calm abiding, that would be different. But, I'm not really too worried about losing myself into hours of concentration at all. But just coming out in general, I would just set a timer. And it's also good to do that because it gives you a sense of, like, Geshe constantly tells us, make sure that he says that you don't see your cushion and go, bleh. He says it like that. It's like, you don't feel like, ugh, I don't want to do that again, because you want to make sure you have a positive feeling. So that's why they say just do 5 minutes, start with something really simple and then increase it as you're comfortable.
And Jill, I'll just add that if there's a day that you really don't have anything else going on and you don't want to set a timer, that's okay too. You can just go with it and, don't worry about getting too lost. Like Jill said, you'll come back and be there.
Yeah. Does that answer your question? Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard Geshe say that you do it until it doesn't feel good. That's the best way, I think.
I kind of do it like that too. Like, you can persevere a little, if you start to, your thoughts are wandering and you're getting just a little, but as soon as there's any agitation or you feel like you've lost the game, then stop, because then that's really good advice.
There's no benefit then.
Yeah, there's no benefit, and you're just beating yourself up because we're so good at that. So just be like, all right, done. That's what becomes so obvious, because it just, you come right back out and then you think, okay, that's good. And we'll stop right there. Yeah. So that's what analytical meditation is about. And the book, the Lam Rim book with the CD in the back, those are analytical meditations. You're literally picking a topic. But you can pick a verse. And when I do it here, I pass out different little verses. And one of them I always put in, always look on the bright side of life, from my personal favorite. I want that played in a loop at my funeral. I want somebody to know that besides my daughter. Always look on the bright. So you can analyze that verse, and the way that would look like is if you were in meditation, you would say, always. I mean, this is just one way. Always. Not sometimes. Always. Whoa. Always. How could I possibly do that? Look. Ooh, not just looking around, but like, look. Look into that, On. Even the word on. On. Look on. Like, look on something. So you can take every word and treat it as dharma. Everything. On the. On what? On the bright side. Not the dark side of the moon, just the bright side. And then of life. Like that one sentence, it's not even in, it's Monty Python. You can make that a gorgeous meditation. So that's analytical. You're analyzing every word, and you're in that way, if you have a wandering mind, you're going to be so focused because you're looking at every word. So it really, my ADD people have always loved that. It helps so much because they can just stay on those words. So that's analysis. Now we're really far behind. Okay, that's okay. Having fun. All right. Obstacles. From the sublime to the mundane. So anybody have any problems that's arising that they... I think we did a little bit of that last week. So is there anything that's coming up that you wanted to just say, this is something that's bothering me in meditation? Aaron.
I keep getting a lot of shoulder pain about... Oh, sorry.
I keep getting a lot of shoulder pain about 10 minutes into it.
That's common. Is it in the middle of your back or right at the shoulders?
It's like...
Yeah. That is just so common. When we're doing long retreats, as a yoga teacher there, I always, everybody starts off with like, oh my God, my knees are hurting so bad. And then you hear, my hips are hurting. And then that, like, that spot right between my shoulder blades. And so it is just a product of sitting, you know. And we talked about, he was in yoga last night, which is at 5:30 on Mondays. Donation only. I do that too, so it's out there. So, like, if you sit like this all day, your pecs are really short, you know, and then these are all overstretched. And you start to sit and you go, I need to have this good posture. And you're like, oh, God. So it just hurts because you're probably trying to be sit really proper, you know. Just loosen up, relax. Be comfortable with it. Shake it out a little bit, too. You know, you can drop your shoulders like that and get them to relax and you can move. So if you just think you've got to hold it, you know, too tight, it can cause discomfort. You think that's what's happening?
Yeah.
I know him so well these last 4 weeks. All right. Anything else? So drowsiness and distraction seem to be pretty much the big obstacles they've assumed that you're going to have. Who's of the drowsiness club? No, I thought there'd be more. Who's of the distraction club? Who doesn't have any of these problems whatsoever? Good, she doesn't. As it should be. So, drowsiness, it prevents meditative clarity. Big duh, right? And distraction prevents meditative stability. While that's obvious, it's good to know because you really want to try to avoid it so that you don't have an issue with it. So meditative stability means you're stable in your meditation, you're comfortable in it, because the distraction isn't very comfortable. And drowsiness, there's just no clarity. Have you yet experienced that you think you're really amazing and you find that you're falling asleep? We talked about that last week. And you think, oh, I got this. And you do it. So you can't let yourself be fooled, because it's like it's really a tomfoolery thing. So while we live through the day, our minds are under the control of external objects. So it's, you know, it's really different when you turn internal. It's when you turn internal. Does that sound right? Because it's just you're not under the control of all these things happening to you. So the thoughts are like the one running water in every direction. And so we're trying, oh, that's what that was about, channeling the water. I couldn't think why those streams and tributaries. It's channeling. Thank goodness, I thought. I wouldn't want you to go home with the wrong. Oh. Okay, so it's channeling that water. That's what it's about. All those energies, we're trying to get them to go in the same direction. And I heard Venerable Rene, he's like a chief calm abiding, so he's our dude. He said in one of these things that he said in a Swiss accent that I can't do, that's quite lovely, that our electrons and neutrons line up. So when you have that feeling of really good kind of blissful sensation, even if it's just a baby feeling, there's something literally happening, like physically. So I think that's exciting, because it's not just like the experience. It's also changing the electrons and neutrons in your body. That's why meditation is so good for you. It's changing your body. So when those things line up, apparently they're just, you know, like this. And when they line up, they calm down. That's why it feels so good. Is it kind of cool to think about there's something tangibly happening to you guys too? Because then it happens more and more and more and more, and then it stays. Like I think that's really good news. So we're trying to channel this energy that's distracted all day long and get it to go where we want it to go. And the word control usually has negative connotation. I've heard it used about me. So, but when you learn to have control in your mind, you need to have control over it, because right now we don't have control, right? I mean, it just takes you. It's like pulling you by a nose ring, just taking you wherever it wants you to go. So if you get control through meditation, you place it where you want it to go, on a virtuous thought, on a kind thought, on what you need to do. You have control. It's just of the utmost importance. Okay. And even our memory will start to work better. I wonder if that can happen for the postmenopausal. maybe I would be a lot worse if I hadn't ever meditated. So, and then the analytical process gets sharper. The thinking gets clearer. So it's all good stuff. Okay, so here are the antidotes. Distraction Club, raise your hand again. All right, here's what you do. Focusing more firmly on the breath. So you just remind yourself, I'm on the breath, I'm on the breath. And then you can, excuse me, visualize an image. So you can start to use an image more and more if you get really distracted. And they say to make it very heavy and very small. I don't actually know why, but I trust that like it's concentrating it and focusing it down. So you, if you're distracted, it's because, you know, the energy is going out. And it even feels like that, like, ah, oh, it's like it's flying around your head. So you bring it in and make it really small, and then you just focus on that. So that's supposed to really help. So here's some interesting ideas. Imagine and concentrate on a small seed with the top half white and the lower half red at the level of your navel. That's pretty specific, wouldn't you say? So can you picture that? Like, that's just like, see, the mind just, it will do what you tell it to do because it really is like a child. So if you say, did you hear that? I mean, it'll stop anything. It'll go, what? Because it's like there's somebody else in there, right? Did you hear that? Huh? And everything else stops and it just starts to listen. So if you tell it where you want it to go, just see it at my navel. It's like a kindergartner with a project. Have you ever taken to Layla and said, give this giraffe to Daddy? And they go, okay. And then they try to walk over and they go, hello, Daddy. And then if you play the game right, then he goes, give this zebra to Mom. And then they go, okay. And they do it with like all of their concentration. So it's not, does it feel any different in your mind, really? So if you tell it something to do, it just goes, okay. And that was Mengir Yungge, I don't know how you say that, Rinpoche, was talking about anxiety, and he is hysterical. He's got some YouTube things and some books out here. And he said it really will do what you tell it to do. You can trick yourself. I mean, like, how do we buy that? I don't know. But if I said, did you hear that? Don't you just think, what? Right? So, little seed. And then engage in a short reflection. This isn't always so fun, but you'll understand why. Engage in a short reflection on a sobering subject, such as death and impermanence, or the suffering of oneself or others. Use this to gain determination to get control of the mind. So if it wants to have flights of fancy and go on, what's my next vacation, then you bring it on something that's sobering. Check your physical posture. So if the head is lifted too high like this, that causes apparently distraction. And then the light may be too bright in the room. Be patient and easy, and don't get agitated when it's difficult. So that's your homework. Drowsiness, people? He's got two hands up. Okay, check the posture. The head may be dropping too far forward, which creates a sense of sleepiness. The spine may not be straight, which lowers your energy. And then opening your eyes halfway, we talked about that, will help bring in a little light. Raise the amount of light in the room, so you guys might want to bring the light up in the room. Even though your eyes might be closed, you'll have a general luminance. Visualize a seed. Now here's different. Imagine that it shoots up through the center of your body and out through the crown of your head. It's much more exciting than those other people. The seed opens and your mind unifies with vast and open spaciousness and light. Don't you want to be in that club?
Yeah.
And concentrate. Like that, just concentrate. Oh, okay. I'll do that. I'll just nail that, and then I won't be drowsy at all. So that's really different. Concentrate on action. And then who does, I didn't ask you, who does both? Yeah, that's me. Sleepy, woo, wide awake and thoughts going, and then sleepy. Yeah, so you can just have a blast. The seed's down here, the seed's up there, the seed's... Okay, and then reflect on something joyful. See, they get to have all the fun. So think of something happy and light, and if you're drowsy, You know, you don't really want to go, yeah, where is my next vacation? Something more dharmically oriented. Check the mind for depression. And then engage in meditations to counteract this state. And then it says get enough sleep. So sometimes, Venerable Tenzin used to say, sometimes you just need to go to sleep. Like if you're really too tired. You don't want to create a habit of, I've done this before when I was new, like I'm so sleepy, I should just take a little nap. Because then every meditation you're just going to want to go to sleep. Like you're going to want to think, oh, I get to go to sleep when I'm done. So, but in general, get more sleep. Okay. Now we're going to read a little. Oh, could I have the book on, is it still in here, Shantideva? Yeah, I forgot. I'm sorry that I needed to read from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh.
What about using something?
I'll repeat it for you.
Okay. What about using something like music, but like a drone, like harmonium, like something.
A chant?
Or just
like she's saying music like a droning.
For your mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could play ohms, you could play something, mm-hmm. You could focus on that. In this tradition, they don't do that, but it's not like it's wrong. Have you used those white noise apps? I've created this creaking boat with some waves and some nature sounds. And then you go to each one and you say, less of that, more of that. It's just wonderful. But I haven't really used it in meditation, so. But, you know, I think trying not to distract yourself with something else, but if it helps, do it, right? Yeah. But something you're saying, not music, but.
Yeah, no words.
Yeah, words. No love songs going on. Okay. So negative and disturbing states of mind can be obstacles in meditation. We all understand that. So here's a little thing to counteract that. And I have a visual aid. Yeah, I've got it right here. So, can't see it at all probably, but I'll explain it. So this is like a rocky pathway. So imagine, use your imagination to imagine rocks, craggy pathway you're trying to walk on and it's not really stable. And if you could, it just doesn't feel good and it's really hard to walk on. So if you could take leather and place it on the pathway, you could walk pretty smooth, right? Kind of hard to do though, right? Or you could put on a pair of shoes. It's got leather on the bottom, and you can walk on the pathway. So now we're going to relate that to Shantideva. So when these negative and disturbing thoughts arise, imagine each rock is somebody that pisses you off, irritates you. And see, notice the word, they irritate me. We know that's not really true because we have learned probably to say, I am allowing myself to be irritated. But we love to say, they just drive me crazy. So think of the rocks as everything that just annoys you, gets in your negative thoughts, and all that stuff. And you have control. So there, it's happening. It's all happening. It's all happening out there. It's not going to stop happening. So if you want that to stop happening, you're going to suffer over and over and over again. If you just keep saying, if they would just quit doing that, do you know what I want to name? I'm not going to get another dog, I swear. But if I did, and you can have this name. The best name in the world would be Peeves. Because then you could walk around going, have you met my pet, Peeves? And the reason that would be so beautiful is because if you tell yourself, I'm never going to say that again, make a vow to me tonight, or yourself. I'm never going to say, oh, I'm sorry I didn't tell you that's just one of my pet peeves. So if I had told you that, you would know not to do that again because it's my pet peeve. So obviously, you're not going to do that again because it's my pet peeve. And if you love me, you really aren't going to do that because you wouldn't want to annoy me that much, right? But we just say, oh, that's my pet peeve. Have you done that? Have you said like, oh, that's my pet peeve? And what is that saying? You've just annoyed me. And I'm not changing. But you need to stop doing it because it's my pet peeve. So name your pet peeves. And you'll always remember that. I think that would be fun. I should change Augie's name to Peeves. All right. So Shanti Davis says, unruly beings are as limited as space. They cannot possibly all be overcome. However, if I overcome thoughts of anger alone, this will be equivalent to vanquishing all foes. Where would I possibly find enough leather with which to cover the surface of the earth? Yet wearing leather just on the soles of my shoes is equivalent to covering the earth with it. Isn't that cool? So you are the one who has complete control to having a peaceful mind. Nobody else is responsible for it. Nobody. Not even your spouse. Believe it or not. Okay, so the five primary delusions. Anger, that's easy. Attachment, exaggerating the good qualities. Pride, we know what that means. Ignorance. Ignorance is about not understanding how things exist, not just being dumb. So ignorance is about not understanding how everything truly exists as impermanent and interdependent. And doubt, not really believing things. So anger, attachment, pride, ignorance, and doubt. These are the five primary delusions. So the antidotes. So, well, we don't want to make you raise your hand for this. Internally raise your hand if you're in the anger club. The antidote is to meditate on love. So make that the topic of some of your meditations. Meditate on love. Attachment. This is a weird one in Buddhism. Meditate on ugliness. So if you're severely attached to a loved one, they say, you know what I'm going to say, right? You picture them as skin and bones, bags of pus, blood and veins and junk and piles of poo. I'm translating a little. But Venerable Gatso was sitting at our retreat, you know, the guy I told you about that said, turn your cell phones off. And then his was ringing. He just was like, the person next to you is totally filled with poo. We're like, oh my God, where's he going with this? But we've been around long enough to know that he's saying, we're all walking around and we're all full of shit. And everybody, unless they just had a colonic, everybody is. So the person that you love so much is filled with poo. And you just hug them and love on them. You know, isn't it funny? Can you imagine the monks talking about this? It's hysterical. Because it's a different culture, so they talk about farting and stuff all the time. It's like a really different culture. So I'm having to do it in front of you. Imagine. So meditating on ugliness is the antidote to attachment. So if you feel really attached, overly exaggerating the good qualities, you'll start giggling and they'll be like, what? Nothing. Pride. Meditate on sickness, aging and death, or uncertainty. Uncertainty. So I heard, where are we in time? Okay. His Holiness talking when I was very new to this practice, and he was saying, whenever I think of pride, I think of like computers. Because I don't understand. So it's an antidote to pride for him because he's just like, oh yeah, well, I don't understand that. So obviously I don't understand everything. I'm a Leo. You know what I did? I went, oh, I can probably figure it out. Like, oh my God. So I had to keep upping the ante and I went, rocket science. Like, well, if I just studied really hard, like, oh God, no, I don't understand. I don't even understand math, you know. I mean, my pride was getting in the way of understanding pride. So I went, aha, understanding not having pride. Yeah, that way, So that was like a pride buster. Could I ever believe, you know, it's just like, it's interesting what arises in your mind. And if pride arises, you just think of something like learning Russian or learning something that you couldn't comprehend or, anybody Leo in the room? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. All right, ignorance. So that's not understanding how things exist. You meditate on interdependent origination. And that means, that's a mouthful, but it's really cool and important. This piece of, chimer. What is that called? Besides drumstick mallet or chimer. Chimer mallet. This chimer mallet couldn't exist if it weren't for trees, right? And so just think about the equipment that this came out of and the designer and the people who touched it and every part of the piece of equipment where this came out of came from something else. And then the tree came from the ground when all the bugs and the worms and the water and the rain and the sun and the seed it started from, which came from a tree, and the seed it started from, which came from a tree, and the seed it started from. There is just nothing, and then it's on its way out. It looks like it's existing. I can go like that. And so it feels like it's really here, but it's just on its way to becoming sawdust, really. Because if termites got a hold of it, it would become sawdust. So it's never really totally here. It just kind of feels like it is because I can use it. But the way it exists is always on its way rising and on its way falling. So you can't find a moment that's like, that's where that chimer mallet exists. It's just, and so are we. Don't want to scare you, but you know, we're on our way up and we're on our way out. So interdependence is the connectivity of all the things that make this come to be, which means you are too, billions and billions of stars, right? We come from stardust, and we're going to go back to stardust, so that's why everything's all connected. What was that movie with the two people looking out through the window on the airplane? It was so sweet. And they had just met each other, and they fell in love and broke up on a flight. I'm the only one who saw that. Did I dream it? They were looking out through the window, and they're talking about all the stars. And okay, anyway, that is lost on this crowd. Okay, the last one, ignorance, is doubt. So, being in two minds about reality. I haven't heard it put like that before. So, you just wouldn't just say you can't make up your mind. You know, you're having doubt. So, that's a delusion. So, we're talking about the Dharma here, not just, you know, about life in general. So, it's about the Dharma. You're having two minds that you're not convinced of something. So, it's a delusion because you're going both camps. Okay? Now, we're going to do another meditation on transforming negative experience into positive. Got to finish the sentence. There it is. All right. Everybody comfortable? Got your back nice and straight, but not too much? If you're leaning against a chair, lean forward a little bit. Take a nice big breath in and relax. You can use your 9-round breathing now that you're experts. Or just focus on your simple breath, settling the mind into a more concentrated state. And generate your motivation and your strong intention of why you're doing this meditation. Training our mind over and over to experience difficulties with calm, with a calm, clear, and gentle approach. Spend a few moments thinking about your day and the experiences that you've had today. Focus especially on a difficult situation that may have arisen. Try to think of one where you may have become impatient, either with yourself or others, lost your temper, seen others as problems, enemies, maybe even lashing out at somebody. Remembering that the situation is over, that you're only experiencing the memories. In the past, but we're going to bring it to mind. Remembering what happened from the beginning to the end. Watch and observe your mind and your behavior as you replay the situation. Now use the techniques and abilities of mindfulness that you've learned to disidentify with those feelings and actions as much as possible and simply watch them and observe them dispassionately, removing the judgment. Just watch this play out. Kind of like watching a play or visualizing a set on a movie set. And now think about the disadvantages and the harmful nature of the negative responses that took place during this situation? How did that person react? How did you react? How did you literally feel while you were being impatient or angry or jealous? Was it actually happy or comfortable? Was it peaceful? Or did the feeling lead to angry words and actions? And if so, what effect did they have on you? And how about all the others around you? Was everybody happy? Did it make everything easier? Did the anger help bring about a positive solution? Did everyone feel good and understood? Maybe not. So now, think about how you might have handled it differently. With this calm and balanced, open attitude, with no anger or impatience or resentment, think about how you and others' experience could be completely different. You'd had the ability to have space and mind in the gap in between these thoughts, could it have gone completely different? Generate a strong feeling of how extraordinary it would be if you were able to manage difficult situations like this with a calm and peaceful mind, not controlled by anger or agitation. Reliving your entire situation again, imagining yourself open and warm, calm and balanced, no anger, no agitation. How did it end this time? How was it different? And how do you feel about yourself? Pleased? Did the other people have a different experience? Was it positive for them? So now make a strong determination that the next time you encounter difficulties, that try your patience, that you will take a breath, step back, mind the gap, and try to respond with openness and patience, just like you did in this meditation, controlling your mind and your anger. And each time you experience a situation where your anger rises, make a determination that you will come to your cushion, work it out again, and teach your mind, your brain, to have a different response, training it over and over to be patient, kind, balanced. Now let's dedicate all this positive energy working on our own responses, hoping these insights will really be beneficial to many, many living beings. Isn't that cool? Do you guys like that one? Was it kind of hard to remind yourself of the ick? Anybody want to say anything about that?
I
She's got a microphone for you.
I just liked it because I felt like compared to at least the other meditations we've learned, it was like something really tangible I feel like I've accomplished, as opposed to just like focusing on my breath. It's like, okay, like analyzing how I could handle this situation better in the future.
Right. You're getting somewhere, right? But you have to be able to focus to be able to use it. So it's easier to focus on that, wasn't it? Or was it? It can get a little sleepy sometimes too at night, and you can go like, yeah, as it were. But did anybody else want to say anything about that, how it went for them? Did you feel moved by the ability to do it differently?
For me, it went pretty well. I felt like I was able to elicit emotional response and hold that for about 10 or 15 seconds.
Good. Yeah. It's a happy feeling, isn't it, when you think, wow, I really could do that differently if I could remember that. It's hard to believe that you have the choice, the ability not to act so fast, but we do. All right, now we're going to do something I invented, and so it's a little taboo, but what the heck? When have I been afraid of that? It's called the Great Toilet Paper Debate. Oh, the Great Debate. Which way do you roll? All right. So those of you who are at A, where the toilet paper goes under, raise your hand. See, nobody. Oh, you go that way. Oh, cool. Anybody else? So I got a quote online. Just bear with me. It says, I disagree with everybody here, and don't piss me off. Because I like the word associated with that. It's funny, isn't it? Okay, who's an over? Wow. B, no question. I hate when someone puts my roll on backwards. It's just one of those things that irritates the crap out of me. Sometimes when it's like on A, I change it. That's written there. I used to do that. I used to go change the toilet paper. Obviously, they're wrong, and they just don't know. So, the great toilet paper debate. All of you, we don't usually have it this severe. So, you have to put your toilet paper on the other way. You all have to go in and change your toilet paper. And if somebody changes it, you have to change it back. And you don't have to tell them what you're doing. Because if you do, you could start to have a debate in your household. So my daughter was in here or something. She was in one class and she went, I just put on the back of a toilet tank. She doesn't bother. I'm like, that's really smart because when I was living with somebody one time, I have a container where it just sits on top, and I thought, this is over. There's no debate. It's just sitting on this freaking container, and he puts it on the back of the toilet tank. Well, he's a man. I use it a lot more, right? And I'm always like, and I couldn't ever reach it. I thought, why can't you just put it where it goes? You know, it goes on this thing right here, and I didn't label it. Toilet paper thing. And then one day I realized another teacher said something like, every time you have to do that, instead of getting mad, just go, this represents there's somebody here in my life that's doing that. You know? How lucky. How nice. You could do all kinds of things like, I have toilet paper. It's not a corn cob. Amen. Right? Amen. I live in a world where there is toilet paper. I have 3 extra rolls, like, you know, you could do anything, right? You could just be happy about it instead of bitching about it. But the toilet paper represents our negative minds, if you haven't figured it out. So what about toothpaste? Oh, don't get you started, right? Who squeezes the tube from the top, and the other person's like, oh, and then it's all over, doesn't put the cap on it. Get your own tube of toothpaste. His and hers, or hers and hers, or his and his. Daughters and mothers. So, if these things are driving you crazy, we started off, we're bringing it back. These are your pet peeves. If you can, and I've taught these workshops where women was like, she came back and she was like, no. She would not do the toilet paper. Like, okay, we got to find something simpler for her because she was really mad about it. She was pissed off. So you got to pick something that you can do. So if this is too much to ask, don't do it. But next week, we're going to be talking about, did you change toilet paper and did the world end? Do you really have to search that hard to find it? Because she can do it. Why is it so easy for you to get it from underneath and nobody else can handle it? Is it just the way your mother did it? Is it just the way you were taught? Did you get smacked if you didn't do it that way? I mean, we could, you know, there could be a million things. But the whole reason to do this is to just try not to be upset if it's not going your way. Because the minute you can do that on one thing, and this may be too difficult, we'll see next week, then you can do it on something else. And then you can do it on something else. And eventually you find out that things just aren't irritating you that much. There's nothing that really has to irritate you. There's no irritation juice that somebody's pouring on it, right? We just choose, that's my pet peeve, and I don't like it when you do that. All right? So you're going to take the challenge? Who's going to take the challenge? Who's not going to take it? Is it too hard for you? Mom's like...
I just told him I'm not emotionally stable.
Good to know. Okay, then what are you going to do? Because you have to have a challenge.
I'll think of something, but that one's like a serious...
Will you come up with a challenge for her?
I'll change it for her.
Oh, he'll change it and you have to live with it.
Yeah.
So just challenge yourself with something, you know. Just do something like, you're in the shower and it's too hot. So you make it a little bit colder. And then it's too cold, make it a little colder. And then now it feels like I want a little warmer. And then, I mean, how many times, like, just notice. And when it's spring out, raise the window, lower the window, turn the air conditioner off. Like, that's all we're trying to do is just compensate. We want to be happy, and we think all these things. So just sit there and sweat for a minute and go, I'm not going to die. I'm fine. And don't just jump to change everything to make it go your way. So it's not like you don't choke, you know, don't kill yourself, don't trip over the toilet paper. But just notice when your mind is agitated and you want something to go your way. That's all this is about. Because the more that you don't need it to do that, your spouses are going to thank me. The more you don't need to do that, the happier you're going to be. And you're not going to be that difficult to live with because you're like, that's cool. But you have to know your line. If it's too far, be gentle with yourself. All right? So that's transforming negative problems, a negative experience into positive. All right. What else? I think we whipped through it all. Where are we? 8:20. Ooh. How about free-for-all? Anybody want to say anything? Anything at all? Any difficulty? Yeah, you got something? That's okay.
Going back to, like, the last meditation we did.
Yeah, hold it real close.
Sorry. Going back to the last meditation we did, I found it kind of hard to, like, disassociate myself from that negative experience at first until you started talking about, like, put it, like, in a TV show. And for some reason, I imagined it as, like, Dumbledore's pensieve from Harry Potter. And as soon as I did that, as soon as it was in the water, it was, like, a lot easier to think about as just being the same.
Oh, that's the thing where you put it into. Touch the wand or something into it. Very cool. I got goosebumps on that one. That's a good one. You could use that in meditation. What about, so that I added that part about the movie set. I couldn't think of the set on a movie set. Because I don't know what to call it. But when they're filming a movie and you see that they're filming the movie, there's a new show called The Episode. I love British humor and it's so funny. And so they're shooting it. So it's a show about them shooting a show. You never see the show. And so you're constantly seeing a set. And we've all seen that, right? So if you do that and you imagine that you are the actors, and you can really have fun with this. Like you can start to just make everybody do something a little different. Like you can just change it around. You know, I call it take two or a mulligan. You know what a mulligan is? Is that golf? Mm-hmm. And so you just do it again and do it again and do it again. Or you can start and then you can keep doing it over till there's actually no emotion. Like it just feels like it's gone. And it can be very pleasant. So the teachers say it's okay to practice some of these, but you don't want to get in the habit of constantly bringing anger to your meditation cushion because, as we've said, then then you have a habit of being angry on your meditation cushion. So do it a little, but you don't have to do it a lot. But you'll eventually be able to do it, like, right after the experience. And then the goal is to do it during the experience, right? Like it's arising and you think, oh, I'm going to pretend I'm an actor here. And then you can start to see that she would get really sad if you were yelling at her and all that kind of stuff. So thank you, the pensive. Anything else? All right.
Something that I really liked about that last meditation was I've always been taught that when you meditate, your mind should just be free and clear, but I actually thought about an experience, right? And so it's just a completely different way, like method that I've been taught now. So
it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did it help? Did you feel settled because you were just so focused?
Yeah, it was weird because my mind was clearer than it's ever been when it's tried to just be clear, if that makes any sense.
That's really cool. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. That's interesting. Did anybody else kind of have that experience that you felt more relaxed because you were focused? Yeah? I mean, that's the point, right? Being able to be focused. So you're just trying to find ways to teach yourself to be focused, and if that works, then you've got a success. You know, a feeling of like, now we don't want to make sure we call, like, if it's agitated, a failure. Don't hear it that way. But like a feeling of success, like, oh, that was, you had a nice positive experience. And it's really hard. So when we do calm abiding in this tradition, usually the three things that you can pick, and Geshe will tell you, if you're just kind of playing around with it, you want to concentrate, take a flower or anything and focus on it. But if you were to do this every day, they suggest that you do something very similar, like the same picture, the Buddha, a statue, or something that you can do for the rest of your life, because then you really are going to hone in on this. So an object is one, the breath is another. And the third one, I tried this for a while. Like, I would get so unfocused that I would go, what am I doing? Like, I couldn't even grab it. So it's on the nature of space-like awareness as your object. Now, I don't want to be like the person who said, I want to play the oboe. And they went, that's really hard. Mm-hmm. So I went, oh, wait, no, I want to do it. So I don't want to be defeatist and say, that's really hard. But the nature of space-like awareness as your object is pretty cool. So you're just trying to, like, as your mind opens in space and you feel like you're part of space, you want to try to hold that as your object. Yeah. She's like, whoa, dude. Yeah. You play with it, though. It's kind of fun. But if it makes you get too dreamy, it's not going to be helpful. So it's really cool that you found that helped you focus and you got clearer. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody else? All right. What time are we today? 8:25? They suggested that the homework this week is the bare attention. That's the one where we went up. We started at a feeling at the base, and then we went up and got a feeling right, and then we went back to the base, and you tried to notice the difference. So they suggested practicing that, and mind like the sky, and then counting breath. So basically they're saying do all of them, and then 9 round. So at the end of each day, reflect on the day's action of body, speech, and mind. So these are the three doors where we can have positive or negative attributes come, or karma. I'm trying not to talk about karma too much in the beginning, but you can have positive or negative what's the word I'm trying to use besides karma? Action. Towards, out of your mouth, from your mind, thinking about things, or physically. So Venerable Robina will say, zip your lips and keep your hands to yourself. So if you can't get, you know, don't work on this first. Just stop hitting people. Don't kill them. Don't run them over in your car. Once you've got that licked, then you work on stop yelling at them, stop telling them they're stupid, stop being a jerk. This is kind of her. She talks, you know, just, and then you work on your mind. So that's the hardest one to work on usually. And when people come in here, and some people come into her teachings and they have done some serious stuff, you know, and they're crying and she's trying, and she can be really verbose, and then she can just go, Petal, she's from Australia. Petal, sweetie, did you rape anybody today? Like, no. Did you kill anybody today? No. She's like, well, then you're doing good. So, you know, you have to lighten up a little bit. So give yourself some credit if you're not doing harmful things. If you've already stopped some of that, then yay, right? You're halfway there. If you do walk around hitting people all the time, probably not. But try not killing animals or bugs. Try being really gentle with your body, and then the mind will follow too. Good. So let's dedicate everything that we did. We're doing bookends, so we set a motivation that we hope that everything we do would be beneficial. Now let's hope that everything we did was beneficial, because we're going to take all this home, all this love. We're going to take it home to our family, and our pets, and that made her smile, and our children and our spouses and friends and roommates, and then think about everything below you and above you in the ecosphere, like all the mice we were talking about that live with me, and the roaches, all the ants, all the bugs. Think how many bugs are in your little zone. And just being kind and generous to all of them. Even if you're just doing it in your mind, you're putting out that great vibe. And you're being the change you want to see in the world. Is that the quote? Being the change you want to, Gandhi? Being the change, you want to see in the world. So that's your homework too. Go be nice. And thank you.